Hey everybody, delighted to have back a regular and popular guest with us, Bill Holter. Bill, how are you keeping?
I'm well, Francis. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. We always enjoy it and we always have a good chat. Wow, what probably worth, I'm just doing a newsletter, so I'll throw a couple of things. The highest quarterly high we've had in silver, believe it or not, it's as low as 37.5. So that's actually a breakout on that level, technically. We've had a ripper of a gold quarter and month and week. There's so much. I mean, where do you start? Let me hand over to you and, you know, literally kick off wherever you choose.
Yeah, I think the story in silver is that the sharks are finally smelling blood in the water. And when I say blood in the water, you know, I've been one who's talked about failure to deliver for a long, long time. And it really looks like what has really changed over the last 6 months to a year in the silver market and also gold, but primarily in silver, is that if you look at COMEX, you look at the first notice day, first delivery day, the amount that are standing. In the past, it used to be, and let's just use a number of 100, 100 contracts would be standing, and by the end of the month, maybe 15 or 20 were still standing. Now you start the month with 100 and you may end the month with 200, 250 or more. In other words, there are buyers that are buying in the delivery month with the specific idea of taking delivery. And that is draining. It has been draining inventory. I mean, you can just see the deliveries have been on a massive scale. And I think, you know, enough people are seeing that to understand that the potential of a failure to deliver is very real, very clear, and right in front of us.
That's a great opening statement. I find it feels a little bit from my side like China, Russia, and the rest of the global South, whoever you want to include in that, the non-Western nations, have very calmly and slowly said, we're going sound money, and that means we see you can have your fiat and debt instrument back. And we're definitely going to be net accumulators, yeah? And without doing it violently, there hasn't been one wow. They've just, it's anaconda-like. It's the slow, steady ease. It's not a punch and strike. It's an anaconda death that seems to be creeping up. How do you see?
Yeah, no, that's exactly correct. I mean, if Russia or China or any nation stepped in and created a failure to deliver with a series of big trades, that would be a declaration of war.
Aggressive, yes.
Right. And they don't want a declaration of war. Francis, I mean, there's people out there way smarter than you and me that are Chinese, that are Russian, that are Indian, that, I mean, these people know where this game goes. They understand that if, and central banks across the world, as evidenced by offloading treasuries and unloading gold, they know that when all is said and done, there's going to be a black hole in their balance sheet that was once filled with King Dollar. Now, King Dollar, they understand they got to get out of the way. And let me also say they do understand fully that the dollar is the Achilles heel of the United States and of the entire Western financial system.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to Eric Young and he was highlighting the development. I'd seen it, but we addressed this very specifically with him. The calm and organized vaulting network that is being established for gold outside of China. So, you know, they're looking at a central place in the Middle East. They're looking at Switzerland. Right. They're looking at Singapore. They're looking at India. They're looking at a bunch of places. And this is saying we're going to do gold-backed trade and we'll keep an inventory. And these will be regularly audited and far more transparent. And we'll actually cross, you know, we'll cross the itemization of who owns what with each trade. So you're talking about, you know, you've got the record deficits with the U.S. to Europe and China. This is a totally open lead development of a parallel system, which is gold-backed. Tell us your take on how you see that one working out.
Yeah, I mean, this is simple. I think people, like I said, have and are figuring out that the dollar, the days of King Dollar are behind us, and there is going to be a massive revaluation of gold. Gold is, let me put it simply, gold is coming into the system, not out of the system. And for years and years and years, central banks did their absolute best to try to demonetize gold. It didn't work.
Yeah, failed experiment. And actually, the recent announcements, it got made very much out of favor. We were at peak financialization of everything at the dot-com boom, where
right.
they managed to get gold. And I always highlight, everyone thinks subprime was your depression where everything turned. You have to go further back than that. They won with Volcker tightening the rates. You got a setup for a 40-year bond run that ended in 2020. But gold started moving already from its lows in 2000. And since then, everybody goes, quantitative easing. Well, now, if you're going to do that, I'm going to start inching towards that door. And of course, it captured Brown's Bottom in the UK, where the name changed on the clipboard for all of Britain's gold being uploaded. Canada has zero gold. I mean, the policies they've pursued, it makes you wonder. But I suppose, where's the question in all that? It's a case of when did the cycle really, really start? How far back do we need to go? And how far does it go in lieu of the dollar and the future for America? What's your comments there?
Well, I guess you got to say the true beginning of the cycle was August 15th, 1971,
yeah.
when the U.S. went off the gold standard. Gold, as you mentioned, bottomed in 2000, 2001. From that point forward, from that point forward, gold has gone higher. But back in the 2000s and the 2010s, you would see spectacular smashes of gold and silver that were done with paper, done with, naked futures contracts. That has not been happening. I mean, you can go back to, I believe it was October of 2022. If you look at a chart of gold, it became a tractor in first gear. And the reason being that was the month. And you can look on a chart and it began one day exactly after, the Russian reserves were confiscated.
Yeah. That was a huge, event. It was a huge, in the undermining of the agnostic nature of the Western payment system, it certainly focused minds for the other nations to develop a parallel system. And the development of the parallel system is the death of the old by virtue of definition. I was doing some out-of-the-box thinking, and maybe I'll just share it for you on your take, because 71 is such a key year, as you said. But I also thought, what if we went back to the formation of the Federal Reserve and we went really macro? I'll just show you, and you may be familiar with a technique. I'm not a master of it, Elliott wave theory. But if we said the formation of the Federal Reserve and the beginning of the fractional banking system, this is a quarterly chart. So every candle, which is super small, this is 1933. But it's 1913, you had a fixed gold price at $20 most of the time. So that was, by declaration, a manipulated down market. Because inflation would have been in existence the minute the Fed was established in 1913. They went straight in. You know, we had the Titanic, World War One. They rolled that into, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution, which they supported, and they rolled it into Weimar Germany, and then into World War II. So we got back to back slammed by the banking cartel with overexpenditure and wars and everything. So what if this A, which goes right back to 1913 and the 80 high, you can call it 47 years if you take it from the depression, but maybe if you take it all the way back in 1913, it's probably almost 77 years to 80. And then we had the correction period, BC, as the 20-year financialization of everything after Volcker pushed the rates so high. He kind of cleared the deck, bought some space, 20 years of bear market, but that it's only a corrective in the five wave move like that. Elliott wave is kind of like that. And its rule is the second up leg, which is the third leg, which is the CD leg, which would be from the 252 right the way up, is 161%. It's 61.8% bigger than whatever you took to be your first leg, which we're saying is the $20 fix in the Federal Reserve. You brought in the 70s, which is over here where we clearly went very strongly. But I just wonder, am I going too far? Am I a moon boy now for thinking that since the financialization of the system could just have been that part one leg, and we had 20 years of pullback, because this points to 107,000. But I think that's more a statement about the dollar than gold. What's your take? Just, I don't know if technicals or this thought process resonates for you.
Well, first off, 107,000 is not a stupid number. If you take all the gold that the U.S. supposedly has and you divide that into the debt, and just the on-books debt, you end up with 135,000. So 107,000 is not crazy.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a different take. 1913, when the Fed started, I don't really believe that you saw, I mean, you did see inflation of assets. You saw that in the 1920s.
Yes.
Then you had the crash in 1929 and the depression. You know, the worst years were 1931, 1932, 33, when the banks were closing and the government understood that they had to reflate the system. The only way to reflate the system was to revalue gold. And of course, what they did was they took the population's gold, marked it up, and that fixed the coffers of the U.S. Treasury. From that point forward, then we had World War II, which was very, very inflationary. The U.S. took on a ton of debt, and that was the cause, if you will, of Nixon going off the gold standard, because you had foreign nations, in particular France with De Gaulle, saying, here's $35, we want an ounce of gold. And they did that because they believed an ounce of gold was more valuable than $35, which, of course, they were correct.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to stick with 1971 as opposed to 1913.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they cleaned it up sufficiently that there was no carryover damage in the early 30s, because it took them a while to first start creating the inflation and the overexpenditure rule and all of that. Maybe that takes some time. But certainly, I'm not going to argue that about 1970 being such a critical date. And many people will refer to 2020 in the future as a result of the CV-19. I think that's still too fresh in our minds to see how historically significant it was, the end of that 40-year bond market that they managed to manufacture with when Volcker pushed the rates right up. And that's going to go, that was the pulling of America's bottomless credit card. I certainly think that's going to pop as a far more significant date when we put years between us in it, because I also feel everybody, tell me if you feel this, Bill, everyone else feels like they're sleepwalking on the severity of what this means. Essentially, we're talking about the end of hegemony, but it's not even a friendly handover like the British to the US post-World War II. It was kind of, you eased the baton out of the British hands and patted them on their head. There wasn't anyone getting beaten up about it. They obviously suffered and were the poor man of Europe for decades, paying the Marshall Plan and not having the hegemony currency anymore.
Right.
And that was a massive hit for them in a friendly way. This one isn't. It's a parallel system actively being built due to loss of faith in the original fiat-based system. And do you feel people truly are conceptually grasping the cost of living, the crisis that comes with the dollar and debt debasement? Because I don't.
Yeah, the handover is going to be extremely tumultuous. And I think the biggest problem is that when this happens, everyone is in the West is going to absolutely disdain the United States because they'll understand that it was the dollar, that it was policies, it was U.S. policies that caused a disaster in the Western world. So from within the Western world, I think there's going to be hatred toward the U.S. And then outside of the Western world, you know, you look at the BRICS nations. I mean, I hope this doesn't happen, but they have every right to shit on the United States, shit on the West, because it was our financial engineering that led up to and caused what's about to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel like that. And the downturn, I've got a theory, Bill, that I'd like your take as well. We certainly exposed the lie that was the labor numbers. We've been saying for 3 years what a great lie it was. We've had countless revisions and revisions upon revisions. We had a million. They said there was no recession because they had a red hot labor market. You might remember that phrase. Both Yellen said it and, of course, Powell repeated it, I believe. And then we suddenly realized that there was fake employment. It was government employment. It was contractors to government. And some of it was just superfluous misrepresentation through the birth-death model. And that actually has us believe that we've been more weak as an economy. We were in a recession when we met those criteria. They can't come and intervene it, and the economy has been far weaker. Now they've suddenly acknowledged all that, and they've turned it on the recession. And I'm now harping upon the next lie that hasn't been fully admitted, and all government statistics are now propaganda at the end of empire times, and that's the inflation and CPI. How do you feel about the degree that that's been understated, with especially when we take the dollar into account, having lost 12% to, you know, the euro, which is not a great currency in its own right?
Well, this would be a good question to ask John Williams. I mean, John Williams does, has calculated all the numbers, the inflation, the unemployment, GDP. He's calculated all of them the way they do back in the 1980s, before there were changes upon changes upon changes on how they calculated them. And of course, every change became more government friendly, if you will, made things look better than what they are. I mean, my simple comment is, in my professional career, because I started in 1983, in my professional career, probably 99% of all numbers were incorrect, and in fact, some of them were outright bullshit. It's been self-serving for these numbers that have come out in the past that look so good. And I'm going to ask you kind of a question here, Francis. Do you believe that the timing is odd, that all of a sudden we're finding out that the numbers are bogus, when it looks like the road ends, 100 feet in front of us? While remembering that the laws of the great taking are in place all over the world. So my question, I guess, would be, is it a coincidence? Is it odd? What's your take on now they're pulling the curtain back to show us, or to allow us, the average person, to see that the numbers are bogus, and then they pull the rug on the markets?
Yeah, I mentioned that as part of this collapse, which will be almost a fire, a phoenix,
it's going to be a fire.
Yeah. I think a lot of lies get exposed in the rubble, when you comb through a burnt wreck. And you suddenly find, incendiary devices that were planted long time ago and were the cause of the fire. And you go, hot dang, I always thought that was just in a house. And actually, it turns out it was a munition dump with half the charges loaded and actually mounted in the walls on structural supports. We're looking at a controlled demolition here. The curtain is pulled back gradually by degree, to hyper-normalize the fact that people can get used to the notion that everything they've been told, certainly in terms of government statistics, is a deception and meant to leave. And they slowly own up till eventually the full honesty of the hopelessness of the situation is fully exposed. And I think it's us early talkers, you know, the wallpaper is still covering the moss and all the damage behind, and that there's actually no wall. We're the early guys, you know, who've peeled back the corners and seen, hang, this doesn't look good behind here. Hold on a minute. And most people are still pretty much news watchers, and they take factual, they treat it as factual information for the day. And the degree that everything is going to be recanted on such a scale. I actually was, it's worth sharing this. This is one of your fellow Americans. This Porter Stansbury does a newsletter, but I just thought he wrote a really good tweet here. So I'm going to share it. And that's why I dovetail into your question to me. And this is what he says. Let's hope that's showing now. Yeah, the Chapwood Index, because I think the inflation is the next stat lie that's going to be exposed. But he, and ironically, after posting that, they put all these tweets of high-profile guys dealing with that topic. The Chapwood Index tracks the real-world price fluctuations of 150 consumer items in the 50 largest cities in the U.S. Unlike the government CPI, so this is almost like our friend that we were talking about, Shadow Stats. Unlike the government CPI, the Chapwood Index avoids hedonic adjustments and substitution biases. It's a real index, not propaganda. As an example, the CPI rose 3.5% in 2023. But in Boston, the Chapwood Index shows that the real cost of living increase was 13.6%, basically 10% more. You know, you just add a one to whatever small number you're getting, but only it's not in the digits column, it's in the tens column. If you're trying to understand why gold is going parabolic, please read this thread. That was the bit I saved, and he mentions the Chapwood Index. And I, there's a couple of key points that he makes that are very interesting. It says the middle classes will be financially destroyed. People aren't prepared. There's three major risks to this policy era of what's going on with this lie about inflation. He said, actually, if interest rates applied correctly on the true inflation rate, the Taylor rule would have short-term rates at 17.5%.
Right.
And then if we go on to just read what he says, which is quite an interesting, because I like seeing other people's opinion who are pretty smart and are putting down some numbers. He says there's three major risks. It's likely that all our foreign trading partners will abandon the dollar. That's already happening. You and I both think of it. Certainly as a store of value. It explains the soaring gold price. Yes, yes, yes. Secondly, if this continues for a long period of time, it can't stop. It has to continue. And until we've run the debt valuations right down and we have balanced trade books, not deficits, and we're producing stuff again that other people want to buy in the States, which is a long, long way of dollar devaluation, it's going to have to continue for a lot longer. I don't see how that can't be. So the middle classes will be financially destroyed. And he points out it's already been going since 2008 and 2009 as well. So it's a good point. So the middle class will be financially just resulting in political violence. We've seen the sort of BLM type stuff, Antifa, whatever, all the usual paid factions, the collapse of a high trust society and a huge increase in social ills, such as crimes of desperation. That's kind of hunger driven stuff, homelessness stuff, addiction. You're going to have manic depressants. Prozac is the only thing that's going to do well in this environment. And it's quite a doomsday. The collapse of an honest monetary system has huge repercussions on the real incentives for hard work and thrift. Because one of the governments, and I've been of this view as well, which is why I love this post, because he was echoing and writing down what I've been saying. The governments can't use inflation anymore, Bill, to overspend. So they're going to come direct with direct taxation. And we call it tax scavenge mode is going to be invoked. So at the time you lead it least, you absolutely need these policies least. They're going to be coming at you harvest, which is why we're going to have this uptick in totalitarianism. So the whole social direction, tell us your comment and take. Is Porter just being a doomer here, or does it get that dark?
Well, first, let's just go back to square one and talk about inflation. Look in a dictionary. Don't look in today's dictionary, but look in a dictionary that's 10 years old and look up inflation. And inflation is not CPI. It's not how much stuff goes up in value. It's how much money supply is created.
Correct.
And we're looking at them too, and this is off the top of my head, I'm going to say it's grown long-term, what, in a 7 to 8% range. So you're going to have a 7 to 8% inflation rate, some years above it, some years below it, and primarily above that rate, because you also have to take into account the amount of debt that's been put into the system, because debt is buying power. Yes. I mean, without debt, you wouldn't have a real estate market at these levels. Without debt, when I say debt, in this case, I should say without the use of leverage or margin, you would not have 3%, 3.5% 10-year bonds. They're buying assets, they're buying stocks, they're buying bonds with the use of margin. Look at the margin debt now. With the use of derivatives, it's the financialization that's done this. It is a completely overblown bubble, and I think you have to go back. I mean, we're again at the point where Richard Russell said, "You've got to inflate or you die."
Yeah, and inflating more ensures you definitely will die, but you might get to postpone it a little longer until you run out of runway.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it goes deeper. But the consequences of die financial system, I just think the re-rating in, and it's very misleading out there on social media, because there's people talking about a dollar spike and various other uncontrolled narratives that are intentionally serving as kind of cope. People will queue up at the convenient lie line over the hard-hitting, painful truth queue. You and I know that. Well, they aren't man enough to do it. We saw it with CV19 and everything else. And there's a lot of cope narratives that will say, you're going to be, you know, don't worry, everyone else is worse. You know, we failed our math test, but they got an even lower mark. You know, they're a big idiot. It's sort of dispersion. It's this relativity. But America's the hegemon. They're the ones sending treasury bills and dollars the other way when they buy goods with IOUs on a grander scale. They rely on foreign support for their debt market. Japan doesn't. All of these various things. And I get frustrated because it sounds like I'm being hard on the country. I want people to prepare correctly for something much bigger than they realize is coming. And are we right? Or is there a way you saunter through this? You have a couple of bad years and then you're bouncing back.
Yeah. No, this is absolutely systemic. I mean, you're talking about central banks, sovereign treasuries, literally upside down, insolvent. Look at the Federal Reserve. Look at the ECB, the BOJ, but look at the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, I did the calculation, I think it was in 2021, and at that point, the Fed had $65 billion in actual equity, holding up the entire pyramid upside down. Now, since then, because interest rates rose, you know, they lost several hundred billion dollars, which means the Federal Reserve is technically insolvent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an example. That's a perfect example right there. When this happens, once you get a lockup in credit, everything stops. Nothing runs. And when I say everything, forget about the markets. Forget about stocks, bonds, Bitcoin, everything. Forget about all that. The real economy stops, because the real economy no longer runs without credit. Every instance, everything that's done in the real economy has a use of credit. And I've used the example of a loaf of bread. You take it from seed to the, you know, to the grocery store shelf. And then you could even go beyond that, because people are buying food on credit now. But there's at least 10 uses of credit to create that one loaf of bread. And if any of those credit uses gets disrupted or it ceases, there's no loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Let me make one more comment. In the 1930s, we had the Depression. That was created, if you will, or kicked off from the financial markets. But society was different back then. We still had an agrarian society. And
yep.
Let me just say that people were better back then. Neighbors knew neighbors. Neighbors helped neighbors. And in today's world, when things go bad, neighbors scavenge on neighbors. People are not, they don't have the moral compass that they had back then.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
And what I'm getting at with that, Francis, is because you have people with a poor moral compass, I think it was maybe 2017, I first came out with, my belief is when this goes down, for a spell, whether it be 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, you know, God forbid 6 months, in my opinion, you're going to be looking at Mad Max. Because
yeah.
when you have all the services are going to cease, your ambulance services, your fire services, your police services. And I've actually polled, I've asked probably a dozen different police officers. When things go bad, are you going to go to work or are you going to stay with your family? And the answer that I get depends on what type of police officer I'm talking to. If I'm talking to a state trooper, they're going to be with their family. If I'm talking to the local Barney Fife, I'm going to work. I'm going to do my job.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way, fascinating. And as you say, Mad Max is not a bad encapsulation of it, because you're going to have a lot of people that won't have prepared, who'll be looking out for all those who have, for what they can scavenge, steal. Right. And there will be no rule of law, because there will be no vehicle police service. No one will answer 911. It'll be hot season. You're going to get the bots and the answering messages. And that's if we have phones at the time. I do think it's going to be potentially very, very destabilizing. And community, as you mentioned, and the value system of your community that you're surrounded by, which typically improves when you go more rural and away from urban, of self-help and support, where you are part of an infrastructure together as a collective, is definitely going to count in people's favor if they're positioned accordingly. So that was Porter. Let's bring it back, I suppose, to Silver. Interestingly, on Silver, again, we just show everybody, for everyone else, I'm pretty sure, Bill, you will know this chart too well, but we had a key event, as I've mentioned, with the 47 and a half we're trading. Let's just get the price correctly. Hold on 1 second. Get that screen share going. Share and minimize that. That's the traditionally referred to cup and handle that is now at a quarterly high. And that pink cross marks the spot, essentially, where we are for the quarter in terms of quarterly in the key zone. There has been rejection in the $50, $45 range. We're yet to see anything coming in so far. That is a long scale chart, so it does look a little closer to 50 than it is on a bigger time frame. But that is a key move. The Indians, we've successfully, I want to talk about the Indians on two levels. They're turning into big buyers of silver now that gold is expensive. And their government is now doing what China once did. And more importantly, Trump's conduct towards India has driven them closer and tighter. They were a bit fence-sitting into the hands of the BRICS nations and going all in on this. It's the new system. Your comment on some of that socio-politics, both the silver aspect and the Indians themselves and where they're ending up.
Well, yeah, obviously India is going to do what's best for India. And if they're getting pushed on by the United States, pushed on by Trump, they're going to end up in the arms of someone that's friendly to them. And in this case, it's China. As far as silver is concerned, India has doubled their imports. And what has happened over the last, 9 months ago, or maybe not even 9 months ago, where Russia announced that silver, that they'd be buying silver and considered it a strategic reserve. And then that motion was seconded by the Trump administration in July or August, designating silver as a strategic, as a strategic reserve. So, you know, India could probably just read the headlines and say, well, hey, wait a minute, we got Russia saying they're going to buy silver. We got the United States saying they're going to buy silver. Maybe we should buy silver.
Yeah.
Now, going back to your cup and handle chart, it is without a doubt my opinion that over $50, we get a failure to deliver, because there will be complete blood in the water. And I guess the saying, you know, there's no bull market like a gold bull market. And the reason being, it's not all greed. You have a lot of buyers that have fear. They're buying gold, they're buying silver, fearing that their fiat currency is going to collapse. They're going to be left with nothing. So I will just say this, that fear is a greater emotion than greed.
Yes, we learn that in trading.
Yeah, and one last comment going back to that cup and handle chart. I don't know if a failure to deliver pushes silver, blows it through $50, or whether I don't want to say normal move, but a non-tumultuous move through 50, we get a close over 50, and then you get the sharks coming in and create the failure to deliver. But one way or the other, $50, I mean, it's obviously an important number, 1980, 2011, here we are again. And the only question in my mind is whether the failure to deliver creates above $50 silver, or does above $50 silver create the failure to deliver?
It's the failure to deliver question is very interesting, because the one thing in this dollar devaluation and debt devaluation that isn't being spoken about, and it very rarely comes up, and I think I might have brought it up once before, is we're not, and you brought up the great taking. The one thing that isn't being discussed, I know Bank of America has put $500 billion into treasuries in 2020 before the 55% collapse. Why aren't we talking about the insolvency of the banks? Because the fact that that's quiet worries me more, that we could be very close to the great taking and it's about to explode. With everything that's already transpired, with the currency movements, the gold movements, you're referring to the silver above 50 movements and the derivatives, obviously, which we all know how much of the production is forward sold, et cetera. Why aren't we hearing about that? And what do you think?
You're not hearing about it because they don't want you to hear about it yet. But I mean, you could go back to the early 2000s, Warren Buffett talking about derivatives and calling them weapons of mass financial destruction. He was absolutely right. And the derivatives market now is over $2 quadrillion. The problem with derivatives, with the type of volatility in the markets that we've seen already, and that we're obviously going to see bigger volatility going in the future, the problem with derivatives and volatility is it creates very big winners and very big losers. Now, you win and you start jumping up and down until you find out that your counterparty can't pay you.
Yeah.
Which means they've bankrupted and now they're not paying you. And because they didn't pay you, other counterparties won't do business with you because they're fearing that you're going to go out of business. And that's how the derivatives daisy chain collapses.
It's a Lehman's moment, isn't it?
Exactly.
Ringing your Aussies, you know, the minute there's one bad apple in the batch, could be bad, you know.
Yeah, with one difference. The Lehman moment, central banks and some sports men, and they have the ability to come in and save the system. Who's going to come in now? Who's the white knight going to be that comes in to save the central banks and save the sovereign treasuries? There is none. Actually, there is one, gold.
Yeah.
If a central bank or treasury has gold on their balance sheet, That will be their savior.
Yeah, but they don't have enough of it. And they're
at this point, at this price.
Yes, that's a good point, because that's why we were talking. I also saw a number, it was around 142, that if gold was revalued at 142,000, I think that dovetails with the 135, 136 you were talking about.
Right.
Effectively, America's zero. That means net.
Correct.
I mean, you're up, but your enemy would be very rich. And that's what many don't understand. Well, the Chinese, if they got revalued, everybody's gold gets revalued 142 or 135. We can argue about the number. It's not important. The problem is that just gets America to break even, doesn't it? Whilst other nations could potentially be a lot further for it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, they revalue gold. What that does is it allows the United States to start over. And it allows, or it gives a push, it gives a head start to nations that were not, you know, predominantly dollar-based and had accumulated gold. They get the head start in the next race.
It's a wealth transfer in a single sweep of a pen, really.
Correct.
But when we say a wealth transfer, it's just the acknowledgement of something that's already, in a virtual sense, happened that just hasn't been acknowledged. You know, it's kind of like your wife is already, you know, seeing someone else and sleeping in somebody else's bed. You know, you haven't done the divorce yet, but you're sleeping in the basement. It's happened, but it hasn't yet happened. And I fear the outcome of that sudden. And I wonder how they bring it out. And will they go to war as usual, as part and parcel of this in some sense as well? What's your thoughts on that? Because it seems Trump's rolled back. I mean, his handlers, the decision makers behind him, he's rolled back involvement in the Ukraine-Russia thing. He's saying, okay, Europe, you go and do that. You buy your weapons from us. He's desperate for income. And okay, go fight if you will. I don't know. I think he's being sarcastic a little bit, and who knows, but... what's your take on the geopolitics side that could go as the masking agent for this sudden acknowledgement of reset?
Yeah, I think the best question that you asked was how do they roll it out? How do they announce it? I think if you just look at it from a broad sense, they definitely want to bring forth central bank digital currencies. And there is pushback. Although I can't believe that you know, there are countries now that are voting yes on a digital ID. I don't think people understand the danger of that. But the central bank digital currency is the goal of these governments. They want to bring that forth, and that obviously gives them all kinds of control. I mean, they can shut you off. They would shut you and me off for having this conversation today.
Yeah, and markets down. No more steak and beer, Bill. For the week. And that would really upset us both, wouldn't it? Excellent.
No, wait. Let me finish this. Well, the central bank digital currency is what they want to bring forward. The way they put the central bank digital currency forth is they tank the markets and begin invoking the great taking. When people have nothing, they're going to beg governments, we need universal basic income. We need a central bank digital currency. Please save us. That's how they bring it forth, is they allow the markets to collapse. They take the assets, which now is perfectly legal because those are the laws that are in place, and then they revalue gold. I think that's the chronology of how it works.
Yeah, they don't want too many of the gold bugs to get the full upside. They're going to actually want you to fill in a clipboard and admit to how much you have first. Then they're going to tokenize it, put real-world asset, digital aspect on it, and then you're going to have to pay taxes on it. And if you can't afford the taxes, unrealized capital gains, you're going to have to sell it to pay the taxes. And slowly they'll squeeze everybody out of the metal, or they issue a confiscation order if in some countries maybe as well. So we've really got to watch out for the end game and the great taking. Right. And physical possession is the safest thing, because I'm torn, because we know the miners have got a multiple. They're generating cash. Well, they've got their costs are in a recession with the oil price and, you know, labor salaries. It's an employer's market, not an employee's market. Their top line is in an absolute parabola at the moment. Cash hemorrhaging machines. But if you don't own the certificates in your name, even if you do, I would say you're at risk. But if you don't own it, you're a shoo-in for the great taking. If you do, you might end up with a lawsuit, and who knows what will happen in the rule of law and what governments might do in terms of the rush for resources. The one key point I want to bring in before we close out also on all of this is going back to the chat with Eric Young and the hubs, is there's a lot of commodity nations in the BRICS and the Grand South. And it's going to be in interest for them that true price discovery on commodities, particularly precious metals, take place. So we're going to see the continual unleashing. When you add dollar debasement and true price discovery on commodities, the double hit of both on the inflation number in terms of cost of living is, A, naturally due to the debt instrument shrinkage, the fiat shrinks, and everything that's going to go with American-based collapse. But the price discovery unimpeded is going to find true market force-based prices, which could see, you know, the great claim of African exploitation and all that, getting more of the income. It's a bit like the farmers versus the supermarkets. Actually, the farmers are struggling, and they make something incredibly useful. And we've got this mafia of chains that are actually monopolizing the supply chain inherently. We're suddenly going to be buying from our farmers again, and in the commodity market they're going to be unleashed from that same constraint. Do you agree with that hypothesis?
Oh, I agree with it absolutely. And for years I've said, and this will summarize what you just said, we are going to enter a period of inflation of the things you need and deflation of the things you have.
Exactly. The Netflix service and the flat screen TVs are not necessarily going to be as well sought after as a good food supply.
Well, what I'm getting at, the deflation of the things you have, forget about flat screen TVs and that stuff. I'm talking about stocks, bonds, real estate, wealth.
Yeah.
Deflation of your wealth while you face massive inflation of the things you need to live on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a terrible
squeeze.
Squeeze from the top down and from the bottom up, which is going to be a very, very debilitating. And it's going to have a lot of people screaming for the UBI even before.
Exactly.
I think many people are that aren't used to being close to breadline are getting there. And when this bites harder, it's just going to be so much worse, which is a real doomsday. What do we say to cheer people up? Because we're not a barrel of fun, the two of us, the way we're talking about the future. There is an opportunity, as the Chinese phrase says, in crisis, there's opportunity. Tell us about the opportunity sides for Americans who will be watching this. 50% of our channel are U.S., the odd UK and, other English language nations. What opportunities should they be addressing?
I don't know if this is an opportunity or not, but I believe throughout all of history, what we're living through right now and where we're headed is going to be the most historical time period since the days of Christ.
I agree.
What I would say is count yourself blessed that you got to see firsthand the biggest historical event in man's history.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do, but I don't know if you'll feel like it's a blessing, even if you've played.
No, you won't. You won't. But just understand that what you're watching is stuff that is going to be in as long as there's a human race, it's going to be in history books. You'll be telling your grandchildren, if you're in 20s or 30s, you'll be telling your grandchildren 50 years from now and great grandchildren what actually happened and I just like the Great Depression, I'm not exactly sure that, you know, history is going to be written so that the average person gets the truth, but it is going to be an absolute historical event. And I mean, I don't know about the average person, but I feel, because it's the way my mind works, I feel that this is, it's going to be horrific, but it's going to be a chance for me to see the history unfold.
Yeah. It's an incredible story, even if not a cheery one. Do the right thing first, and that's run on the minimum fiat, be stoic, live within your means, settle debt and accumulate precious metals would certainly be part of the opportunity, because interest rate spikes will be how they get you out of your home. Try settle your mortgage if you have one, get it registered just in your own name, get the banks out of your life, and you'll be part of the few. Get rural, potentially, and be plugged in into a community where you can have joint security against those that didn't prepare, and expect anarchy, and hope to hunker down in a law-abiding, high-trust community. I think that's the – I don't know how much more I can add on all of that. Anything else you would?
I would just say do the best you can. You're definitely going to forget some things. I mean, there's absolutely nobody out there that's going to have every single hole plugged. So whatever you forgot, don't beat yourself up. Just do the best you can. And, you know, just get yourself prepared mentally, physically, get yourself right with your God. Because what comes is unlike anything that's ever happened before.
Yeah. I feel you're right.
It's happened in individual nations, you know, when they've gone into hyperinflation, but it's never been a worldwide event. And yeah, this is a worldwide event. And hopefully it does not end in war, which is what almost always happens when economies and markets fail.
Yeah.
We go to war. Hopefully, you know, this one is doesn't follow history.
Yeah, I hope so too, but I'm not sure. I have too much confidence. Bill, it's been great as ever chatting to you. Thanks for sharing your time. How do people engage and find you best for your writings and your work?
Sure, you can go to my website. It's simply billholter.com. If you want to contact me, there is a contact button on my site, or you can go directly to my business email. It's bholter@proton.me.
Excellent. And I'd strongly advise Bill, as one of the tightest screwed on heads in terms of the severity of matters coming the US ways, you can do far worse than doing exactly that, going to billholter.com and in hitting the contact button there. Bill, we appreciate your time as ever. Have a great weekend ahead, and let's do this again in a month or so.
Sure. Thank you, Francis.
Bye-bye for now.
Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups and other YouTube channels? Looking for a better way to trade, reduce your stress, and minimize your risk? Become a skilled technical analyst and see the charts and markets in a new light using the successfully proven HVF method by Francis Hunt, while being surrounded and supported by a principled, structured, and experienced community. Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser and app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately, strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts and price action just like Francis. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. We've changed thousands of traders' lives. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us on the link below.